Getting paid to get out. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. The Trump administration has a new plan to incentivize more immigrants here illegally to leave the U.S.
DHS will announce today that they're going to start paying for the commercial flights of illegal aliens who self-deport from the U.S. And on top of that, they're going to pay them an additional $1,000 stipend once they're confirmed to have left the country. Now, DHS says doing this is going to be significantly cheaper for the American taxpayer. They tell us that right now it costs, on average, about $17,000 to arrest, detain, and deport someone.
That's Fox's Bill Malugin. It is Cinco de Mayo, but in some Democrat-led cities like Chicago and Philadelphia, celebrations have been canceled, fearing some who gather could be arrested and deported. Now, President Trump wants to make Alcatraz great again, planning to rebuild, enlarge, and then reopen the notorious prison that closed 62 years ago. It's now a tourist attraction in the San Francisco Bay.
It's long been a symbol, Alcatraz. It's a symbol of law and order.
Now, the president also said last night, returning to the White House, he's proposing a film industry gets some help. He claims it's dying.
If they're not willing to make a movie inside the United States, then we should have a tariff on movies that come in.
He wants 100% tariff on foreign films. The war in Gaza may soon get more intense. Israeli ministers approved a plan today to expand the fight against Hamas, which is still holding hostages taken in the 2023 terror attack. Israel wants to capture the entire Gaza Strip and occupy the Palestinian territory. They're starting to pick a jury today to put hip-hop star and music producer Sean Diddy Combs on trial.
Combs has pleaded not guilty to charges including sex trafficking and racketeering conspiracy. Prosecutors allege Diddy was the head of a criminal enterprise, abusing women and threatening violence for their participation in drug-fueled sex parties with male prostitutes called freak-offs.
That's Fox's C.B. Cotton outside the federal court in New York City. America's listening to Fox News.
When you hear the term living better, what do you think about? More money, bigger house, maybe a yacht? Or do you think how you feel physically, how you wake up every day, how you sleep, what activities you can and can't do? When you feel good, life is good. It's easy for us to take our health for granted until we can't. I came to that reality when I started feeling pain every day at about 45, and I started to lose hope until I found Relief Factor. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by doctors, it doesn't just mask the pain temporarily. It helps reduce or even eliminate pain. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Give their 3-week quick start a try. It's $19.95, less than a dollar a day, and it takes one phone call, 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF. Wherever you're hurting in 3 weeks or even days, Relief Factor can give you a chance to rediscover the true meaning of living better again. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. 1-800-4-RELIEF.
From the News 11's Information Desk, I'm Manoa Tuyasosopo. Law enforcement is investigating a shooting in Yuma that left two people dead. Yuma County Sheriff's Office says it happened around 2:20 p.m. Saturday in the area of Wall Lane and Summerton Avenue. After receiving a 911 call with a silent open line, upon arrival, deputies found two people with apparent gunshot wounds, both pronounced dead at the scene. If anyone has any information regarding the case, reach out to YCSO or call 78-CRIME to remain anonymous. Now switching gears to much lighter news. Local nurses in Yuma gathered for a special night of recognition and achievements. The 2025 Yuma County Nurses Gala took place at the Hoffman Estates. Over 100 local nurses and their families gathered for dinner, guest speakers, and awards. The City of Yuma was also on hand to proclaim May 6th through the 12th as Nurses Week in Yuma. Catch us on the TV side on News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest weather, sports, and local news.
Pleasant day today at the high of 77, partly cloudy, 61 overnight tonight, and then gradually warming toward a hot weekend. 84 and sunny tomorrow, 62 tomorrow night, sunny and 90 on Wednesday, 66 on Wednesday night.
What is your healing power? Maybe your healing power is helping veterans with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, depression, anxiety, or loneliness. Is your healing power a simple, heartfelt letter or being a volunteer? It is estimated that over 500,000 current warfighters will return from service diagnosed with PTSD, and 22 veterans will commit suicide every day. Our veterans have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. At HealVets.org, you can find out more about the healing power of pen pals, volunteers, therapy kits, and more. Discover your healing power at HealVets.org. Help Heal Veterans, together with you, has been helping one recovering veteran at a time. We are helping veterans heal together. What is your healing power? To find out about your power, visit HealVets.org. This PSA is sponsored by Help Heal Veterans.
Wildlife around the globe needs help. And when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. A real friend. The kind of friend you want to thank. And not just with a card or a text, but with a song.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
From your friends at the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, thank you for helping protect wildlife around the globe. Without you, there's no them. Learn more at sdzwa.org/friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
Every day, savings, energy efficiency, rebates. Every day at APS, you have ways to save energy and money. We know how important it is to keep your bill as low as possible. That's why we offer programs to help you manage your energy use. Schedule a home energy checkup for savings recommendations tailored to your home. Find rebates on smart thermostats. Compare your rate plan options and switch to the plan that would have saved you the most money. Find ways to save at APS.com/brighter.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Well, Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
It's like wrestling a bear, trying to get you pinned down. You were so busy. In fact, when I came in, you were on the phone working a job still.
I mean, right.
Constantly working.
I've got a lot of irons in the fire.
You ever not work?
Yeah, we do take time out. That's about midnight till 2 a.m.
Oh, that's the Trump method.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can do it. What is he, like 83? How old is he?
He's in his 80s, yeah. Well, no.
Maybe late 70s?
Late 70s.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to call late 70s.
So, you hear of his schedule, it's like, I don't know how you can do that. But
I know some people that they have just a 4-hour sleep schedule. Jane Edwards is one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of got into this with my wife the other day because she was saying she uses social media a lot. And so she self-diagnoses herself with things all the time, you know.
Oh, nice.
OCD, Tourette's, I don't know, you name it.
Google University.
Yeah. And so one of these things is the lack of sleep and how women specifically have to get like so much more sleep than anybody else. You can't even imagine how much sleep they need and they never get enough.
Right.
Okay. And I'm like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I subscribe to that. And who's the one that came up with that? I mean, maybe it's not like that. Maybe you only need a couple hours of sleep. I would assume you can make that happen.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that an excuse to stay in bed?
Yeah, I don't know. I would never say that out loud to her, but
right?
Those are the thoughts I have.
You know me, I'm just kind of cut and dry that way.
Yeah, yeah. So you're a Yuma kid, right?
I was born in Cherry Point, North Carolina, but I am a Yuma native from 1970 until present. I've been in Yuma 50 years.
So when did you move here then?
My dad brought us down military when I was, I want to say I was a year old.
Okay.
And then, of course, my mom and dad, they split. And through time, my dad eventually moved back to Indiana, where my family's from. And that was about 8 years old or so.
But you didn't go. You stayed with mom here.
We stayed with mom here, yeah. Kindergarten through college and then some.
So Yuma is what you know.
It is.
If you were here since you were one.
Yeah, it is.
Very cool. And you went to Yuma High?
Class of 87. Go Crims.
Go Crims, yeah. I was playing around with AI last week, and you ever play with AI?
ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was using, and I came across this prompt. It was, I don't know where I saw it, but it said, hey, if you ask it this, it'll show you a picture of what it was like at that particular time. So it was something like, what would it look like? Show me a picture of what it would look like in 1955 at the movie theater or something like that in Springville, Illinois. And then it generates a picture of that time period. And so I asked it to generate a picture of the Yuma Territorial Prison in 1886, I think, something like that. And, It did it, and then I asked it to show me a picture of 1917, and it did it with some inmates there, you know, like in the picture. And I said, is this what it would look like? And they said, well, actually, it was being used as a school at that time. And so I said, well, do it again. And it generated another picture with students like in the I don't know if you call it the breezeway, but you've been in prison, right? They're in between the cells. You've got those walkways.
Right.
And I asked, well, did they actually hold class like that? And it said, no, primarily in the cells. So it gave me another picture of them in the cells and like in the attire that would have been in 1917. It was pretty interesting.
Now, is this on your laptop? Because, I mean, my ChatGPT is on the phone and all I get is words. I don't get pictures.
You got to pay for it.
Oh, got that.
Upgrade, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't do upgrades.
Don't be cheap. You got to pay for it. No, yeah, so it was on my phone.
Right.
Right, yeah. So interesting, though. But that I bring that up because you went to Yuma High, and they're the Criminals, which is a very unique mascot. I think nationally it's the only one.
Trademarked.
It is. Really?
It is trademarked.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe it is the only one trademarked in the nation.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
What I love about Yuma High, one of the things I like about Yuma High is specifically their wrestling team when they come out. They're
yeah. They look intimidating, right?
Yeah, super cool.
I'm a wrestler, a criminal.
That brings up your son. He went to Yuma Catholic, didn't he?
He did.
Did pretty well there. Wasn't he a wrestler?
He was a wrestler and football player both.
Yeah.
Right. So his wrestling career actually started in junior high over at Castle Dome. And he ended up going all the way to, well, he broke a collarbone in a wrestling match over here at COFA about 6 weeks before the state tournament. And this is at junior high level. And his eighth grade year, he actually was undefeated here in Yuma. And then he went to state and competed all the way up to going into the finals. But with a 6 week old broken collarbone, he was happy with what he had done.
Sure.
And so he actually bowed out and forfeited that match because he didn't want that collarbone coming through the skin.
Wow.
He was feeling some pain. And so we let him do what he had to do. And in fact, he really wasn't supposed to go that far. He needed, as a team, they needed him to win up to the quarterfinals.
Right.
Well, he won the quarterfinals, and there was a wrestler named Mota, was from Somerton, Somerton. It was Somerton Middle School. And through the entire season, he wanted to wrestle that kid. And he got the opportunity to wrestle him for the semis, and he beat him.
Oh, good.
And so that was his win, and actually that one win made it to where the team won the tournament.
Wow.
So we brought home the championship that year thanks to Seth. And, of course, thanks to the other wrestlers, because without them winning, it wouldn't have been where
right,
it was.
Right.
But Seth did go that extra mile. He did beat Mota to go into the finals. But then during that match, he hurt himself. And he says, you know what, Dad, I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah.
And so we gave up first place, and he was happy with second. From there, he did wrestle at YC. He wrestled for 3 years there. And he took he was a state placer all 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was good. But during his career over at YC, he really I never let him play football until he was a freshman at YC.
Oh, really?
And I did that because I know the YC program.
Yeah.
I know how they care for their kids. They're very strict. It's a very rigorous deal, and not everybody is going to make it. So when we talked to the coach about playing, I had to tell the coach, you know, this is a two-way street. I will let him try out for summer, but he has to like you, and you have to like him, as far as the relationship has to go. And at the end of the summer, they did like him. They did put him in, and he wanted to do it. And he actually took that all the way to Division II football level at Western New Mexico University.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. So what's he doing now?
He's actually back in town. Okay. Books weren't so great for him. kind of like myself. I don't learn from books. I learn from hands-on experience.
Yeah. Some people are like that.
And so he's, you know, the fruit didn't fall too far from the tree. And he's like me. And so he did try kinesiology. Just the books didn't work out. He tried welding for just a little bit. He actually applied for Yuma County Sheriff's Department about 6 months ago. And we've heard crickets.
Really?
So during that time frame of waiting for him to get the call, I decided I wanted him to be my my helper and my driver so that I could answer the phone and do my paperwork while he's driving me from job to job, and started training him. Within about 6 weeks of that, he says, Dad, I really love what I'm doing here. I want to make this my career. And who am I going to say no to that? Yeah. You know, I'm a tradesman myself. I know the benefit of it. I know that he will never be out of a job in a trade. Mm-hmm. And so instead of him going out and chasing a degree that he may or may not use and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on that, I'm going to teach him in the field what he can learn. He will go back to college and get a business degree because eventually he wants to own his, and maybe not even a business degree, but business education.
Yeah.
Because he does eventually want to own his own show. So, you know, I'm very proud of him for making that decision of what he wanted to do. And the career in the electrical trades is where it's at for him. He's really diving into it. He's enjoying it. He told me flat out, Dad, I get the satisfaction of going to somebody's house and fixing something that they can't.
Right.
So he's diving in with both feet, and I'm really proud of him for that.
How did you jump into this? So you've got your own business, Yuma Electric Service.
Correct.
How long have you been operating that?
So I've got 37 years experience. Actually, I'm reaching 40 years experience now.
Did you start this up? I don't know if I sorry to cut you off, but I'm bringing this up, but we've had conversations about your business before in the past, but I don't know if I ever asked you, did you buy somebody out or did you start from scratch? You just put this together.
So I started this from scratch with myself and my wife. She dug the trenches with me, crawled in attics with me, and still to this day, she will do that if I ask her to. And we were driving around in a 1978 Chevy Blazer.
Okay.
That was our service truck. Uh-huh. And so we started it from scratch. Basically, what had happened, the history on that is, I worked in the trades as the electrician, and here in Yuma, especially back then, it was seasonal work. You would work really hard in the wintertime, but then in the summertime, you would end up going home on a layoff. And so chasing jobs really got to be hard for me. And the last job I worked for was for Specialty Electric here in Yuma. And we already had one child. We were living in a trailer park, renting to own the home, but renting the lot. Mm-hmm. And then we were pregnant with child number two. I went in and I asked for a raise. And at that time, I was making, I think, $13.25 an hour. I was number one in their service department, with a 99.8 callback free. In other words, out of 1,000 jobs, I might have a callback on two. I had the highest billable rate in the company that on an average 8-hour day, I would bill out 10 to 12 hours because that's a 1-hour minimum. You go in, you fix it in under an hour, and you're on to the next one.
Not to brag or anything.
Well, that's what I'm kind of giving you a preface of what's going to happen was, with all that said, and having baby number two on the way, I went in and I asked for a raise. They gave me a 25-cent raise. But they also gave me a set of keys to take the midnight and weekend calls. What that did was that actually took me into a lower take home because it raised me into the next tax bracket. I was right on that threshold.
Yeah.
So I really didn't get what I wanted. I actually got penalized by asking for a raise, which thank you for the 25 cents, but you just made me take home less money.
Mm-hmm.
I went in and I asked for more. And they said, Albert Ramos, he was the manager of the service department at the time. He sat me down in front of the computer and showed me all those stats that I just told you. I was the most successful service department electrician in their company as far as billable rate, mm-hmm. callback rates, those types of things. But he told me that I had topped out, that mm-hmm. they couldn't give me any more. And so from there, I understood.
Sure.
You know, that, okay, I'm not going to get any better. If I want to get better, I'm going to have to do this on my own, or I'm going to have to go to government work. So I worked for them. I never stole their clients. I do not believe in that. But I also went out and reached out for my own clients.
Yeah.
And I knew that when I can get to a level of 20 hours of billable time, that that's all I needed to be able to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got to that level, and I walked away, and knowing that 20 hours of billable time pays the bills, but now I got 20 to 40 other hours to go out and get more work. And so I never looked back. From day one, I've never looked back that we've been able to, and that was April 20th, 1998.
I was just going to ask, this was in the 90s?
Yeah, April 20th, 1998 was my start date for Yuma Electric Service, and we have never looked back since then.
How was Christine through all this? Was
she enjoyed it.
Was she nervous?
She was very supportive, and she still is to this day, but there is a but that goes with that. Your business will take you over if you do not manage it and do not handle it. We are married to the business, and that's the way it is for any business owner. You're married to your business. Mm-hmm. My home life started to suffer, and it's not that she threatened divorce, and that never was in there in the equation, but I was working 24/7 mm-hmm. because I had to start my business, and I was...
You got to do what you got
to
do.
Well, that success really depended on me being able to take care of my family or not. Mm-hmm. And so I was driven that I was going to do whatever I had to do. I don't care if it's a 3 o'clock emergency call.
Sure.
I had to do that. But then after a couple of years of that, my wife one day when I came home at like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, she says, you know, what you're doing is wonderful and you're doing great things for us. But what's the use of having a family if you're never home for them? Mm-hmm. And that struck a chord with me. So immediately I stopped taking emergency calls, but I still work 7 days a week. Well, after time of that, you know, we kind of worked it out to where I was able to stop taking the Saturday calls. And to this day, I still have that mythology that, or the method that I do not want to have my employees working like I did, working yourself to the, because life is not about just work.
Right.
You've got to have a balance. And I did not have that. So I try with my employees, I don't want you working overtime unless we absolutely have to. We do not take emergency calls, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls, and we do not work weekends. Mm. If we have a client that really, really needs us, then okay. We will make that sacrifice once in a while, but that's not our standard procedure that we do here. We do want to have our family life. We want to have our work life, but we want to be able to have that balance.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
We're the comfort experts, people you can trust. Ask our customers. That's why they count on us. Over 50 years of service, keep us going strong. We've got a name you can depend upon.
And electric
Hansburger. Count on us.
It's been a real journey since 2014 when I first had my injury. I realized that my home was just not working for me and that it was time to ask for help. Homestar Troops is really giving me my life back. The shower allows me to go in and turn around with my chair, pull down storage racks, automated door systems, hours of my morning given back to me. Adaptive sports are a huge part of my life, a huge part of my healing journey as well. Homestar Troops helped with making sure that I had a home gym so that I can continue to train. This past year, I was able to host Thanksgiving in my home. And it was the first time I was able to have my whole family in one place and I was able to contribute to the meal. There are a lot more veterans in need and Homestar Troops is going to be there to help them too.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post-9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
Once there was a man who couldn't stand.
A mom who couldn't wait.
A scientific community that said it couldn't be done.
And then you.
And then I.
And then we.
Brought neuromuscular disease into screaming color with the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
For 75 years, our voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
We've willed the impossible into existence.
We've pushed the science,
raised the funds,
shifted the narrative,
and transformed the reality of life with neuromuscular diseases.
For 75 years, we've built communities together,
established the field of neuromuscular medicine,
and made it thrive.
Call that a legacy.
Call it impact.
Call it momentum.
Just call it ours.
Because it's the generations of community heroes that give MDA the strength we have today.
And until neuromuscular disease is a thing of the past, you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
What I found is, as a small business owner, you have to balance things, because we meet with clients, so many clients every day, and you're the same. You've got all these jobs that you got to juggle, and it's very difficult sometimes when people come in with a story that pulls on your heartstrings, and you're in this position where it's like, well, I want to help you out, because I have this innate feeling that I want to help people. And at the same time, it's like, I still have to get compensated in some fashion, or else all of us lose.
Right.
All my employees, we can't sustain what we have here. My family suffers. The employees here suffer. Did you ever experience that where you felt like you just weren't, I guess I should ask it this way. Did you ever have a problem charging what you're worth?
No. I know my worth. We are not the cheapest guy on the block, and I admit that wholeheartedly to all of my clients. And I say clients because we want to build a relationship of a forever client rather than just a one-time customer. So we are very upfront with what we do. Mm-hmm. We are very upfront with our honesty. We do not try to upsell you, but our value is our value. And if you want to go cheap, I tell everybody, if you want the cheap way, then you need to call somebody else. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to cut corners. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it the right way. And really, in the electrical industry, people in our trades, and actually probably in plumbing and things, but as an electrician, we use the code book as our Bible. The problem that I have with that is that a lot of business owners locally use the code book as their maximum. This is all I have to do.
I see.
I had an instance actually just 2 weeks ago, a house over in Las Barrancas, nice $700,000 house. Customer calls me because he's having problems in his garage and he wants to split the circuit. So I go over there and come to find out there's 7 interior garage outlets, 6 outside garage outlets, and then the lights and the 2 garage door openers that are all on one breaker. And so I got a hold of the county and talked to the inspector about that. I actually got a hold of the electrician that did the job, and come to find out it's code compliant. Even though he's tripping breakers and he's overloading, because it's a general outlet by code, you can put in 14 outlets.
Okay.
We will not do that. The code book to me is my bare bones minimum, and we always will supersede that. If I run a circuit, instead of there being 14 outlets on it, I'll have probably 6 to 8 outlets on one circuit, rather than, you know, saying, well, the code book says this is all I have to do, or this is, you know, we don't play that way. And because of that, I have a forever workmanship warranty. We stand behind that 100%. So our labor, if we do an improper installation, or if we don't do something correct, if I mount a panel on your wall and it starts to fall off 7 years from now, mm-hmm. we're going back and fixing it for free. Wow. We are currently going into homes that are not even 6 months old and fixing circuitry because they are overloading the circuits.
Is that right?
Kitchens especially. Code book says you have to have 2 countertop circuits. Mm-hmm. When I wire a custom home, it'll have 4 to 5. And that's just the way that we do it, because your kitchen is your workplace. Sure. That's where you're prepping your meals. Look at all the appliances that we have nowadays that we didn't have 30 years mm-hmm. ago. So overload is huge. And that's where we separate ourselves. And I have no problem charging our billable rate doing what we do, because we know it's going to be done right.
I've found it fascinating. It's interesting that we have so much electricity coming in as far as volts and watts into our building, if you will. And then what we're doing is because anything we plug in, it's got an adapter to get it down to 12 volts.
Right.
Why don't we just do that at the source, at the panel?
I would love to
just run
that.
Low voltage throughout the households. It'd be cheaper, more effective, less risk.
Right. And you see that in RVs and fifth wheels and things like that, where they have that combination. They have their 12 volt lighting, and then they have the generator for the 120 volt stuff where you plug in. I would love to see that, where we actually get rid of 120-volt lighting and go into the 12-volt lighting.
That's all you would need. I guess you'd need it for a couple of things, washers, dryers, those big,
right.
big things. But not even the fridges. Maybe the fridge. Fridge and freezers and
Your appliances
that.
Will need 120
the
volts.
The bigger ones.
Right. But for the most part, I'd like to see that. I mean, and they do make outlets now that have the USB jack in it, so you can charge your phones. They have those reducers on that. Yeah. And then, like, the transformer issue for going to, say, a computer, those are a little bit different, where that's a manufacturer make, mm-hmm. where they have the plug-in cord dropping it down. So I haven't seen a manufacturer give me a 12-volt computer cord yet.
You got to have – nowadays, you got to have a lot more than that.
Right.
Yeah, the computer over there, I mean, that was $4,500, and it sucks some power.
Right.
It's got to run some AI stuff on it, so it's got to have a lot of power to do that. I just think it's interesting over time. I think we just have accepted what we have, but I don't know why we haven't innovated in that area. It would be, in my opinion, a lot safer, cheaper. These electronics that we have they would be a lot cheaper because they don't have to do all these adapters.
Right.
You know, they got to get it down to 12 volts at that outlet level. And it's like, well, you don't need to do that anymore. You can just do straight 12 volts into the, mm-hmm. the actual appliance and saving us all, you know, pushing that on in cost savings to us. So you've got your business. You said it was 30 years?
Well, it's been 27 years. 1998 is when I started. So I'm at 27 years now.
What do you see in the future? What's going on? Are you retiring and sailing off into the sunset soon?
No. I did have an opportunity to have a succession program with one of my employees. We had talked about trying to get a contract going and talked to finance about it over at Yuma Investment Group. I had talked to Tom over there, trying to get things in order. And right about a week or two before we were supposed to be able to do this, the candidate that I was going to do, he was in-house, decided to quit me and go to work at the Marine base unannounced. He gave me a 7-working-day notice instead of the ask for 2 weeks. And this is my guy that was running the show. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, you know, to give me more time, but he says, I can't because I have to report at a certain time or I don't get the job. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately I lost that opportunity with him. I did teach him to become an electrician. I did move him up in the ranks because that's how we believe in doing, you know, building up from the inside. Mm-hmm. And he took opportunity to go to the Marine base. I think that owning a business, I gave him a taste of that. He ran the business for almost a year with me in the background and letting him run the show. And I think it scared him. He started to see the implications of what happens in family life, that when you go home, your job's not over. Mm-hmm. He went to a government job where he can go to work, do his time and go home. So he was safe.
Sure.
I cannot take that away from him. You know, good on him for doing that. But
yeah.
I was not able to make that. So now my tools are back on. You saw this morning, like you said, that I was on the phone already, you know, before even sun up starts, we say, it seems like. And when I go home at 8 o'clock tonight, I'll still be on the computer doing things that I have to do. I do shut down, but there is those things that you have to take care of. For my future, I don't know if I have another succession program available for any of my employees that I have now.
Mm-hmm.
I have had opportunity to sell the business, mm-hmm. and the opportunity to me just wasn't right. And so I said no. But the door is always open. If somebody wanted to buy my business and it was going to be a good agreement that we can talk about keeping the legacy of Yuma Electric Service, keeping my employees working because I care about them. I don't want somebody to buy my business and then just get rid of them. Keeping our methods and keeping our mission, mm-hmm. then at some point in time, I am going to have to, you know, let it go, whether it's through death or through retirement. One way or the other, I'm going to have to let it go.
Uh-huh. Hopefully not death.
Right. Well, I don't want to work until I'm dead. You know, and, you know, I don't really like the word retirement. I like the word financial freedom.
There you go.
And so I want to be able to do what I love to do, which is electrical.
Yeah.
I love being in my community. I love going out and volunteering and helping where I can. But I do know that my business is my tool for finance to get me where I need to go.
Yeah.
I'm not too far away. Maybe in the next 3 years, I'll have all of my bills paid for. That my house is the last thing to pay for, and I'm about 3 years out.
Very cool.
And then I will be debt-free, so then it becomes financial freedom after debt-free. So
sure.
That's kind of where I'm going with that, is I'm hoping in the next 3 years that I could back off, let my employees do what they have to do, because I don't need to have so much income.
You have how many kids? 3?
I have 3 children, yes.
Yeah. I've got 6, and so my oldest is about to graduate this year, and he's going off, you know, and doing his own thing. But I, as a father, you wonder, like, where are they going to end up? What are they going to do? And of course, as parents, we have it all planned out for them, right?
Yeah.
We know exactly what they need to do and how to do it. And I think, in my mind, I'm like, well, should my kids go work for somebody and kind of become an employee? Is there a success down that road? Or what I found is I feel like I'm happy. I'm, you know, I can make my own hours. I have freedom. I have, you know, I control that, right? I don't have to report to an employer.
Right.
And I'm not always subjected to the employer's, you know, fist or hand, heavy hand. And I don't have to worry about coming to work one day and my employer saying, you don't have a job, right? You're done.
Right.
So I don't know what should we as parents, in your opinion, push our kids to be more entrepreneurial, or should we push them more towards kind of like a corporate mindset? What do you think? What's your opinion?
I think it's going to depend on their career choice. If they want to be a doctor, they're going to have to go to college. If they want to be an electrician or something to that effect, you can learn a lot in the field. And that's exactly what I did. Yeah. So it's kind of it's a double-edged sword. First and foremost, you got to let them be what they want to be. I know that me as a dad, I know what I want them to be, which is successful. And maybe I try to push them in certain areas of where I know, but I don't know everything. I don't know what I don't know. So maybe there's an area like both of my daughters went into education.
Mm.
And I am not an educator. At least I don't look at myself that way. People say, well, yeah, you're training your electricians. You're training your helpers. Yeah, there is a certain level of education or educational, you know, teaching, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But they went into it in the professional area. And so good on them on that, because that's something that I couldn't tell them to do, and I can't even tell them how to do it.
Sure.
So there is that, you know, yes, you need to go to college for certain things, but I don't think that college is for everyone. I think that there is a lot of value in learning in the field, hands-on experience. And even as teachers, you need to have somebody leads you, take you by the hand and lead you down that road before you can start doing it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's where at the collegiate level, you're going in college, you're learning and they're teaching you those things. Whereas out in the field, yes, we want you to have a background in theory. Yes, we want you to have a background in formulas and load calculations and code, but that's not going to teach you how to use a drill. And those are the things that we want to be able to do out in the field is how do you properly handle that drill so it doesn't rip your arm off?
Yeah.
How do you properly cut a piece of conduit without cutting your finger off?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you climb a ladder without falling down? Those are the things that you're not going to learn in a college book. You're just not going to learn those things. So I think that really to answer your question, you got to find out first, what does he want to do or she, and then guide them with what they want to do to make them happy. A little story about my daughter, my middle child. She's my butterfly. She started out in education. You know, she left high school. She went to U of A and wanted to be ag education. Then she went from that to wanting to be a nurse. Then she went from that to wanting to be computer graphic design. Well, finally, after going back and forth for a couple of years and her not succeeding in any of those and really not really knowing what she wanted to do, I had to stop her. And I was like, you know, Hannah, what do you want to do with yourself? And she says, you know, I just want to make you happy. That right there alone, that's all that your child wants to do.
Right.
They want to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they will do what you want them to do, not what they want to do, because for the sake of making you happy. So I had to stop her right there and I said, Hannah, I want you to take time off from school. I want you to go home and figure yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you want to do. You are the one that has to wake up every day and go to that job. Don't do it because dad told you so or because mom told you so. You need to go because you want to go. And so after a little bit of time, she called and says, you know what, dad, I want to go back to school and I want to be an educator. So we went full circle. She went from freshman at U of A, ag education, to all those different career paths. Baking was even included in it and catering. I mean, she did a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But now she is finally on her path that she sees the light at the end of the tunnel. And she is an educator.
Mm-hmm.
She went in as a special needs educator. And so she was doing that over out past Tucson in Vail.
Mm-hmm.
She just recently quit that. She quit the Vail school where she was working because she is trying to get more credits taken care of. It. You know, the school is taking more time than she has as far as time versus or work versus education.
Okay.
So she had to quit her work to get her education so that she can go back and get her degree and be done.
I see. And she's happy.
She's happy. She finally found herself. She found her niche. She still loves her art. And she does all those types of things. But now she knows her career path that she wants to be on. So we're proud of her for that.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death,
and the Law right after this.
Looking to stay informed on Yuma's business community? Tune in this Wednesday for the Chamber Chatter Show, hosted by Carrie Zaragoza, Executive Director of the Yuma County Chamber of Commerce. Get the latest updates, business opportunities, and advocacy efforts that help our local businesses grow and thrive. Stay connected, stay informed, and support the community that supports you. The Chamber Chatter Show this Wednesday, brought to you by the Yuma County Chamber of Commerce, your voice for business.
Are you looking for more in this world? Are you ready for something bigger? Then we are looking for you. The big-hearted, the bold, the messy and the gutsy. The teachers, the growers, the builders. The skilled, the sharers, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go all in and all out. We are volunteers, partners, communities, working together, living together, bringing our experience, passion, and joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya, from sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo, we learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff, to go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at peacecorps.gov.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive. Like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian, who with her hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex, how did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom! I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
You mentioned earlier you've kind of got involved in the community. This last year, you became a little bit more political, didn't you?
Yeah.
The Yuma Elementary School District 1 Board of...
Yeah, the school board.
School board, right?
Yeah, I don't like to call it political because it's really not, but my heart is Christian and conservative.
Okay.
And when I saw the things that were going on and that what our previous board was allowing, and I went there as a member of our public to speak about those things in the board meetings and to ask them.
You don't have a kid in elementary school right now.
I do not. My youngest is 20 years old.
Yeah.
So I went to the board to go speak of those things that I was against and trying to get them to, you know, do something about it. Mm-hmm. And they voluntarily chose to disregard everything that not only myself, but a majority of the public was talking about. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I decided, you know what, if you're not going to listen to us as the public, I'm going to do something about that. And so I ran for the school board, and I ran with my partner, David Ibarra. We were both conservative, and we both won by a landslide.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. We had over 20,000 votes each, and the closest person next to us had 15,000.
Wow.
So the community made a statement. It was loud and clear that we are not going to tolerate the things that the board was trying, or not just the board, but that the district was trying mm-hmm. to do. And I know it has nothing to do with the teachers. I don't want to say that on them because it's not. They are doing a very fantastic job. I've been doing a lot of school visits, and they're doing a fantastic job with our kids, but they have to do what they are directed to by the admin.
Mm-hmm.
And our superintendent at the time and the board, they are at the top of the food chain when it comes to that of district policy, and they were refusing to make policy that was going to be a conservative value policy. So that's where I had to make a stand, and I ran, and now we're running that right now very well. We're very successful with what we're doing.
What have you learned, you know, in this capacity? Is it similar to what you've been doing in your work life, or is it now you're in government and it's just a mess?
It's a mess. I will tell that straight out, and that's something I learned very quickly. As a business owner, if I make a when I make a decision to do something, I implement it right now.
Yeah.
I'm learning, and it's very hard and frustrating, but I'm learning that, first of all, I'm only one of five board members. Mm-hmm. So not only do I have my idea, but now I have to convince the board to go to agree with my idea. Then we have to implement that idea into a policy that has to be written, and then have to have a first read. And then anything and everything that we are trying to do, it's probably a 6-month process from start to finish, if everything goes well. Mm. And that's what I'm finding out. So, you know, one of the things I'm very proud of and that I ran on and that I won on is that we will have a written bathroom policy. And that policy is going to be for single sex areas, that whatever your birth certificate says, your sex at birth determines where you will be allowed to go in those single sex areas. Mm-hmm. If you're not comfortable with that, that's fine. We have alternative B for you, but you will not be allowed. If you're a boy in a dress, you're not allowed in the girls' bathroom, the girls' locker room, or the girls' shower. Mm-hmm. You're just not allowed. And that is a written policy that we just actually, the school board, Arizona School Board Association and our attorney, they are working on my rough draft right now. And we will have a written policy in place by the next school year.
Very good. We've seen that over, and I think Tennessee did that. So there's precedent to use. I don't know if you're aware of that, but it's been done before. And some of those Midwest states, they've been successful at that. I think they were challenged in federal court, but I don't think they've been overturned. So those are good models to look at.
We have Tennessee, we have Florida. Mm-hmm. One thing that I guess the attorney had told us is that we're kind of trailblazing a little bit of a different path, because those bathroom policies, if you want to call it, I call it bathroom policy, but it's actually single sex area policy.
Okay.
From what I understand, from what the attorney had told me, is that those are kind of generalized policies that are in Florida and Tennessee. They are also embedded with other policy. My policy is going to be a standalone policy. There is no confusion. There is no looking for it within other policy. This is going to be a standalone,
simple
policy, and this is what we're going to do about it. And so, like I said, it is in underwriting right now. We hope to have a first read. I'm hoping next month.
Okay.
In May. Well, actually, this month, May. We're hoping to have that read.
So you get this policy. It's beautiful. It's all nice and shiny. And you then what? You present it to the rest of the board, and they have to say, okay, we've
already agreed. We already had a board meeting. We've already agreed 5-0 that we will have a policy. So now it's just getting that policy back. That, it, you know, like you said, they need to polish it up for us and mm-hmm. bring us back in legal terms everything that's going to work mm-hmm. for us. And then we approve it. And if we don't approve it, we need to tell them why, which is basically we don't like the verbiage in this, or we need to change that. But
you tell who why? The attorney?
The attorney.
Okay.
Yeah, it goes back to the attorney and the ASBA.
Okay.
Yep, to come back with a revision if we even need one. But I think that the rough draft that we sent them was pretty clear. It's really going to be hard for them to mess that up.
So you get it back, it gets approved, and that's it. The policy's in place.
Not fully. We get it back. We do a first read, and that's
what does
be
that
a,
mean?
So
it's
we
a
actually
public,
have
a public a, meeting.
Yes, during our
come and give their opinion on what you put together.
Right. Yes, we have to have public opportunity. So we come back with what is our actual writ.
Mm-hmm.
We will read that at a school board meeting, and it will be posted public. Everybody can come and accept or deny, or you know, we have a podium for them to stand at and mm-hmm. say their call to the public of how they feel. But we have the first read, and then we have to go in 30 days later at the second board meeting to have a second read.
Okay.
Once everything is approved through the first and second read and that we're good, now we can go in and enact it to make it into a policy.
I see.
So again, we're talking 3 months of just that.
Yeah.
And we've already, I've been in the board. This will be my fifth meeting. My second meeting is where we made it into an action item. So we're already going to be 3 months in, and then another three. So that makes us 6 months, that hopefully by our sixth month, this is actually in policy.
So you mentioned when I said politics, you said, well, I don't see it as political. Well, I do. I mean, you have to get these other four people to get on board, or at least two others, and that's political. So you're doing political things as far as you're advocating for a position that you have. and you have to convince other people to join you, or
right.
What's the point?
Yeah, I can see that aspect of it as being called political, but I don't want to call it a Democrat or a Republican or an independent instance of okay. why I'm doing this.
Sure, sure.
And that's what I've been accused of. I have been openly, there is the other side, the people that don't want this policy, okay. that think that everything is rainbow and roses right now, that it's okay to let a boy in a girl's bathroom. Mm-hmm. Those people are attacking me and saying that I am doing this as a Republican.
I see.
I am a card-carrying Republican, mm-hmm. and I am proud of that. But this has nothing to do with politics. This has everything to do with saving our children from having mental anguish, from having the stress of not being able to change your clothes, the possibility. And like I had told people, imagine your child in high school, which we are not high school, but imagine your child in high school that is a 14-year-old freshman daughter in sports or in PE. Mm-hmm. And after PE is over, you got to go shower, and you're showering next to a 17, 18-year-old boy because he feels like he's a girl. Mm-hmm. How do you like that? I know I don't like that.
Yeah.
And the callback that people keep telling me is, well, there's nothing, it's not happening in Yuma. There's nothing, prove to me that this has happened. I was like, well, so are we going to be proactive or are we going to be reactive?
Sure.
Are we going to wait until something happens to then finally say, oh, darn, we should have done something about it? To me, we are going to be proactive. We're going to make this policy before something happens because I don't want to wait until something does happen and then the school gets sued for it. I would rather be sued for making an attempt to correct and to be able to save our children rather than being sued because we did not save our children.
Yeah.
And that's where I say it's not political to me. I don't care if your child is a Democrat family or Republican family. I am doing this for all children. And it is nothing to do with politics like I'm being accused of.
It's more common sense, I guess.
Yeah, right. And before I ran, the straw on the camel's back was the bathroom issue. Prior to that, and it was maybe a year, 8 months prior, the previous school board voted on, approved, and allowed a sex education class, is what it was called. It was supposed to be after-school program. It was supposed to be headed by the health department. And it was a sex education program that they portrayed as emphasis on abstinence. Okay, I can agree with that. We don't want our 6th, 7th, 8th graders having sex. We want to be able to try to plant the seed now to be abstinent, to be able to wait until you're married, to be able to, understand that part of the value of life.
Consequences, yeah.
And the consequences, of an unintended birth, pregnancy. What really ended up happening, and you can go back to YouTube and watch the school board meetings. Keith Ware, it was his very first meeting that he had to go to, and he got paperwork on a Friday, and then back then, the meetings were on Mondays. Mm. He had to read everything that was given to him, and then they did this thing on Monday. And what they had voted on was supposedly the sex education class with the emphasis on abstinence, but with what Keith Ware read, and he held up the pamphlet to prove it, was that they were talking about sodomy. They were talking about masturbation. Hmm. They were talking about same-sex sex. They were talking about all these other things, and they were saying, well, we don't want you to have sex, but if you do, these are what the things you should do to not get pregnant.
I see. Okay.
And so they were promoting sex rather than promoting abstinence. Mm. Not only that, they were promoting gay sex. Mm-hmm. They were promoting anal sex. They were promoting things, and this is 6th, 7th, this and 8th graders.
Middle schoolers.
So when the public found out about it, there was an uproar, and it got reversed, and it got stopped. But the board actually voted for that. So if you want to call politics...
Do you think that's because they just didn't read it?
Well, no. I know for sure that Faith Klostrike read it, and she was definitely the one that was pushing for it.
Okay.
Teresa Fox, I'm not sure. She didn't say one way or the other, but I would assume that her being in law and being the person that she is in the professional world, that she did read it.
Mm-hmm.
Adele Henning, she was also on the board that voted. It was a 3-2 in favor. And Adele Henning, when she was asked by a friend of hers, how could you vote for such a thing? She did say, well, I didn't know I had to read it. Well, as a school board member, your job is to read the policies and to be able to implement policies. And evidently she didn't do her job, and she was just going along with the flow because she was told to.
Well, that's why I asked the question, because the way that you presented it in the beginning, I'm sure it was all of that stuff. You know, that's at the top is this is an after school program to teach abstinence, right?
Right.
And so, okay, that sounds good. I don't need to read the rest, you know.
Right.
If that summarizes what this is about, then I'm good.
Right.
I could foresee somebody doing that or thinking that, but
and the argument that those ladies had was this is an opt-in program. You know, the parents can sign a permission slip to let them either go or not to participate. Mm-hmm. How many parents actually read those? I mean, do you? I know when my child was going to school, and I'm guilty just as much as everybody else, that you get a whole slew of papers, especially at the beginning of the school year, and you're signing them. You're not really reading word for word everything that's in there. And then my other argument to that is, did they tell you in that permission slip what they were really teaching you? So I don't know if there was a full transparency in there or if there was not. But the fact of the matter is, they were trying to say, well, you could opt out if you really want to. But is a parent really going to understand what was really going on in that class? And a lot of parents, you know, they're in such a hurry and they're in their old world that they're just signing a piece of document. Yeah, okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm. And so that really was upsetting to me to see that they allowed that. And that was one of the first triggers for me. And then when they, you know, just wanted to completely ignore having a bathroom policy, that was the final straw that decided, you know, where I was going to run.
It's funny you say, as parents, we get so much paper. We're inundated by papers coming home from the school. Or now it's like, now it's on your phone. It's just text after text.
Right.
And so at a certain point, you're just like, I'm just going to mute that because it's just onerous in my day. But I was going through some old paperwork of mine, and I found some old documents from when I was in elementary school, one of which was titled Corporal Punishment Policy. It talked about we have the right to spank your kid and all this stuff. I'm like, dang, those are the good old days. I remember if you got sent to the office, you're probably going to get a ruler.
Right.
And switched, right? Do you think we should bring that back?
You know, I think that we do need some more disciplinary action. Now, beating a child, I know that I had to go pick my own switch when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the belt.
You're like this small, right? Smallest thing you can find.
But at 55 years old, I remember those things. So I think that there needs to be a certain level of discipline for sure. I don't know if being able to physically put your hands on that child is legally allowable nowadays.
Yeah.
So there might be that. But I know for a fact from talking to parents that are having issues that the discipline factor is just not there. And I've talked to the superintendent about that. I've talked to some teachers. I've talked to some parents. And one of the biggest reasons that kids are leaving the public school system and going into private schools or home schools or charters is because of the lack of disciplinary action.
Well, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Of course. Thank you.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
El Dorado broadcasters in this station congratulate the newest Yuma County Chamber of Commerce members. Zero Point Processing, Consulado de Mexico in Yuma, Arc Capital, Financial and Insurance Services. If you'd like to find out how you can become a member and join all the benefits membership brings, email Anna at yumachamber.org. That's Anna at yumachamber.org or call 928-782-2567.
You know your business needs to get in the digital game, marketing on the internet, and maybe finally fixing your website. Don't let the world pass you by. Go to yumaadvertising.com. That's yumaadvertising.com. They're part of the Desert Southwest's largest media company, and their team has executed thousands of digital marketing campaigns across the country. Digital campaigns for businesses just like yours. Who knew they needed to get in the game? yumaadvertising.com. That's yumaadvertising.com. Don't let the world pass you by.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU Eldorado Broadcasters LLC nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.